Mike is only 69 years old. That is very young in the sport of thoroughbred racing, very young in general, but very young in the sport of thoroughbred racing for trainers to step away from the game. And he is with us now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike, appreciate the time, my friend.
Well, thank you.
You know, if you can let's do it. If you can win tomorrow, you're going to pick up win number 1,427. What a career. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been a long 40-something years.
Yeah, well, what's made it so long? It sounds like things have gone pretty well for Mike Hutchin.
Yeah, they have gone pretty well, but anybody that knows what it's like to train horses knows that there's a lot of ups and downs. I mean, I'm thankful for being able to do it, and I loved my job, but the highs are very high, but the lows are pretty low, and they hang around for a while, you know, when you lose 80% of your races, you're doing better than most other people.
Yeah, that's for sure. It's a thankless game sometimes. And I always used to tell people, if you had a job at McDonald's and worked as many hours, you'd be a gazillionaire.
Believe me, I'm not complaining. I consider myself tremendously lucky to be able to have made a living doing this all these years.
I saw
just more trying to tell you why I figure it's just time. The time has just come for me to fold.
I saw you were quoted as saying something to the effect of you've been looking forward to sitting in the bakery and reading the newspaper and having your coffee for the last 40 years. And I thought that was a kind of a great line, because there's so many times in a trainer's life that they miss out on things, you know, with their families and their friends, because they're working, you know, 7 days a week. And it's those little pleasures that most people get to enjoy in their life, trainers miss out on.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And that's the way I feel. You know, I started last year taking Sundays off, which I never did, and spending them with my grandkids. And that's been wonderful, wonderful. But it even made me think more about how I want to be able to spend more time and get away and do things with them and my family.
Mike, when you think about this career, you look back to your very first winner in 1975 at Aqueduct, Tugboat Ryan, and then you think about so many of those other outstanding horses you've had the privilege to be around. Tell us about some of the moments that you're just always going to remember.
Well, I know with Lumber Guy, when he finished second in the Breeders' Cup, that'll always be in my mind, because, you know, when you have a horse, well, as a better, you know it too, and you think you have the race won at the 16th pole or at the 8th pole, you think he's going to get there, and they don't. It's like losing twice, and you know, on the biggest stage there is. That was a tough one. But you know, boy, every win's a thrill. I remember Alan Jerkins said one time, somebody asked him why he got so emotional in the winner's circle so often with so many horses, and his answer was, "Well, you never know when a win's going to be your last one." He said, I know what he meant. It's tough. Wins are thrilling no matter what kind of a race it is.
Yeah,
it's nice with the pros that go out there and run hard. And every time you bring them out there, you know, they're the horses that are really fun to train. They make trainers and jockeys and look good and owners happy. They're not that easy to find.
No, and a lot of times, you know, the best training jobs that you do are with horses that aren't famous, you know, but you know, yeah, that you did something really special, and that's maybe the most gratifying thing about being a trainer.
That's very true. I mean, a maiden 25 win can be just as fulfilling as any stake.
Visiting with trainer Mike Hutchin here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike, you've had so many relationships, really nice relationships with trainers and owners for a very, very long time. Some of those owners include the likes of Barry Schwartz, for example. Tell me about some of the people who have kind of helped you and supported you over the years? And how difficult is it going to be to not be showing up to work for them every single day?
Well, when I, you know, when I started training, I didn't have any relatives or any really know any owners on the racetrack. I came in pretty cold, so when I started training, I didn't had two horses, but not too much to fall back on as far as communication. I was working so hard, I wasn't like I could sit over in the clubhouse and talk to people about it. And a man named Seymour Cohen took a shot with me and gave me four claiming horses to train, and we got on a little roll with that, with those horses, and my phone started ringing, Barry Schwartz started to notice me, and Richard Migliori took me over to Barry's house in Saratoga one afternoon. And that was 25 years ago, and that was really when things turned the corner.
You know, Mr. Schwartz and you, at least 25 years together, that's so rare in our business these days. Talk about that relationship a little bit.
Well, it's always been a little give and take. You know, Barry would listen to me, but he knows the game, and he'd have an opinion sometimes, and that's always been fine. And I said to everybody, it's amazing. It's 25 years without an argument. It's been a wonderful time. And Barry and Cheryl, you know, have always treated me like family. Couldn't ask for any more.
How did he react when you made that phone call, Mike, and said, Barry, this is it. I'm done.
He's the best. It was almost like he said, good for you.
That's
you know, as I explained, started to explain why he understood, and he had already thought it through, and he's, every owner of mine was just totally supportive that I called. Mr. Broman was a wonderful man. He was great. The Blue Guy Bison guys and Stuart Hoffman, they were wonderful. Everybody's been totally supportive and understanding.
You know, you mentioned a couple of pretty big names, and Richard Migliori and then Alan Jerkins earlier in the interview. Talk about some of those people on this side of the fence, so to speak, Mike, that supported you and helped you along the way. Some of the horsemen and some of those jockeys.
Well, you know, I've had relationships with a lot of riders that, I kind of stick with mostly one rider through the barn when I can, and I've had the privilege of sticking with some good ones. I mean, Ramon Dominguez and I we had great chemistry and a crazy good record for the time that he was riding, and he's such a special gentleman. You know, and still, of course, still is. But I mean, as a rider, you know, there was Channing Hill and Aaron Grider, Richie, of course. You know, and Jose Ortiz and I, when they first came over here, Jose and Irad Ortiz and Manny Franco. They get them in the barn working three horses together. It was a lot of fun. And as far as trainers, you know, Alan, when I was getting started too, he'd send me a horse to train every now and then, send me a horse or two that he owned himself. That was always fun. But I've developed a lot of strong friendships. The first one that comes to my mind is Jimmy Jerkins, who was just, as far as I'm concerned, he's second to none at the job and as a person.
Yeah, we would second that too, because Jimmy is one of the classiest people that you're ever going to meet. And some people would also say that Mike Hushin is one of those classiest people. And Mike, we can't thank you enough on everything you've done for the sport over the past four decades or so. How emotional is it going to be tomorrow when you walk into the paddock and you saddle those final starters?
I'll probably be a blubbering fool. I'm gonna look like Alan Jerkins used to look. If you want to stake, but I'll get through it somehow, I guess.
Yeah, well, you've earned it. You can enjoy every moment of that tomorrow. And you know, again, we can't thank you enough for taking a little time here this morning. We want to wish you all the best moving forward. How much time do you think you're going to spend around the racetrack now that you're not training and you don't have to show up to work every day?
I don't know. You know, I'm just going to feel these things out as I go. I'm going to take a few deep breaths and take a few months and figure out where I'm going. It's when I say where I'm going, it's not like I'm going to be looking for a job, but just whether I'm going to move closer to my kids or not, you know, or if I wake up in the morning and feel like coming in. You know, people ask me, what are you going to do? And I love giving them the answer, whatever I feel like.
Yeah, such a luxury. That's fantastic. And one thing I'll tell you, you'll still be getting up at 4:30 every morning. It just doesn't go away.
No, I'm setting my sights. I'm setting my sights on 6 o'clock, hoping that I can do that after a couple of months.
That's good. It's taken me like 17 years to sleep in till 5:30. So,
No.
He doesn't want to hear that.
Yeah,
you want to sleep, but it's just inside your clock genes. That's all there is to it.
Yes,
Mike. What advice do you give to a young person that comes to you, or let's say they do come up to you at some point over the next several months, and they say, "Hey, I'd like to maybe try my hand at training horses." What do you tell them?
Well, I think they need to look at the big picture and learn that there's more involved now than being a good man in a stall with a horse. You know, I always thought that my generation back when we started, it was if you knew horses inside and out from being a groom and living with them, what you did back then, that you would make a good trainer. But now it takes more than that. You need to learn management. I mean, you should go to school and take some business courses, some computer courses, because there's no more small men. So shoot to be the big guy. There'll be more of them. You know, 20 years from now, maybe Todd will be retiring and be looking to take somebody to take his place out of the ranks. And the other thing they might try is that Chad Brown went to work for a vet for a year or two, I understand, and that would be a wonderful thing to do. I guess that would be the things that jump into my mind.
Mike, what have you enjoyed most about being a trainer over the past four decades?
I think friendships in the barn and on the rail and with the owners, all the people, and the other thing that comes to mind is all the adrenaline rushes that we get. You know, you can certainly be thankful for that. You know, I could look back and I could have had a very bland type of job and missed out on all the tremendous things that go on with the ups and with the downs, because the downs make the ups that much better.
Well, Mike, enjoy your time with your family and your grandchildren, and we wish you all the best moving forward. Thank you for everything you've done for the sport, and thank you for being with us here this morning on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Thank you.